Spotlight On, the artist interview podcast brought to you by the Little Yellow Building in Brookhaven, Mississippi. I'm your host, Derek Covington Smith, and join us as I get to talk with a different creative each week. We learn about their lives and their stories and what they're doing in Mississippi today. So come along and join us, and let's get into another interview. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Spotlight On. We are continuing to talk about public art, how to bring it into our own locations, how to get funding, how to find artists, how to do all of this stuff and get it into our cities where people can explore. I'm honored this week to have guest Will Jacks. Will is an educator in the Delta. He's also a phenomenal photographer that has these interesting mosaic are currently the work that I've just recently experienced. So these interesting mosaic collages of little photos that make up beautiful big pictures. So I'm extremely happy to have you here, Will. Thank you for joining us. And if you would, why don't you share a little bit about yourself and your life journey through art?
Sure. And thank you for having me. It's certainly an honor to be here. And I have enjoyed listening to these interviews myself. So it's nice to be here. So my name's Will Jacks. I live in just outside of Cleveland. I work at Delta State University. Grew up here in Cleveland, lived pretty much all my life here with the exception of undergrad. I went to Millsaps College and got a degree in Spanish and then taught school for a little bit in Holly Springs and then went back to journalism school at the University of Mississippi. And when that was for grad school, when that was done, came back home and hung a shingle and kind of taught myself how to be a photographer. And I've photographed pretty much everything. If it's legal, I've done it, from things for the New York Times to the local Little League baseball teams. And so I freelanced for 20 some odd years. And through a series of serendipitous events, wound up teaching both in the art department at Delta State and in the journalism school at Ole Miss as an adjunct and or visiting artist in some instances, an adjunct in others, and realized that I really enjoyed that. And that I wanted to work in higher ed. And so I went back to school in 2018 to get an MFA at the Maine College of Art, where I participated as a low-res student. I was able to study in the spring and fall from home, spent two really glorious summers in Maine, in Portland, and finished that degree up last May. And so now I actually work as the program manager for the Mississippi Delta National Heritage Area, which is managed through the Delta Center for Culture and Learning at Delta State University. And so my job involves a little bit of teaching in the traditional sense, a lot of teaching in an atypical sense, wherein I work in communities a lot that are interested in cultural interpretation projects that have lots of different looks. And so my job is to help those ideas be the best ideas that they can be, not really to dictate what they are, but to listen to others and help them find the resources and tools to make those projects come to life.
So with projects like that, do they normally, I mean, I'm sure it's an application process that they would have an idea, they would try to formalize and fill out their idea to the best of their ability and then submit it to someone like yourself or to an organization and hopefully get the follow through and the okay and the support for that. What does that type of an interaction look like?
Well, I would say that our grant program is probably not unlike many others. There's a group of evaluators. We get independent evaluators to assist us in that. We try to be very cognizant of any potential bias that might be there. So our staff does not decide who gets the grants. And I would imagine that That's the case with almost every single grant organization that's out there. If that isn't the case, I would be wary of who's providing the grant. And so we try to get evaluators that have some familiarity with the Mississippi Delta, or at least issues that are common to the region, such as economic disparity, racial strife, educational challenges, resource challenges, transportation challenges, but also things like the culturally rich creative history of the region, the beauty of the land, just all of the uniqueness that's there too. And so those evaluators don't live here, but so they're not intimately familiar with who's applying for applications and usually don't know any of the applicants at all. But if they do, they know them just kind of in a peripheral way. And so those evaluators will go through the grants. We'll have a period where we open for submission, and most organizations will allow about 2 months or so for submission. But you also, if you are, if you're privy to the how grants work, you kind of have an idea of what's expected. And a lot of organizations, and we'll do this too, we'll kind of publish the general guidelines of what we're looking for in our grant. So if you want to start crafting your application before that 2 month window, you certainly can. I think it's wise to do so. And so those get submitted, deadline comes, evaluators review them. It goes through a series of meetings where the evaluators score each application. We'll discuss its strengths and weaknesses. Then we'll have formal meetings where we meet with the evaluators and they discuss with each other those things. And then that moves to a committee with our board of directors who will kind of take that information from the evaluators. They'll add their own insights into the applications as well. And then from there, it goes to the big board of directors who ultimately vote on who receives the funding and who doesn't. So the whole process, once we've gotten the applications in, usually takes about 6 to 8 weeks before we have final approval. Some organizations might move a little slower. It just depends on when you can get people together. And then once we do that, we start to notify people, and then there are contracts that have to go in. That's where things may vary depending on the organization, what you're expected to do. Federal funds are different than state funds, which is different than independent funds. So those are things to look at as well. What are all the strings attached? And federal grants probably have more strings attached than any other funding outlet that's there. So applying for a grant is not just about having a good idea. It's also, do you have the capacity to manage the expectations? We have a lot of compliance that we have to keep up with that that is kind of above our pay grade. These are things that the federal government says, if you're going to take this money and give it away, here's what we have to have. So we have to keep track of lots of paperwork. And so a lot of times that can feel really tedious. But it's part of the process, and the process, if it's to change, changes at the federal level, not necessarily at the local level. But those are things that you have to keep in mind. Are you prepared not just to implement the idea, but to document it, to keep track of the paperwork, to handle the accounting side of it? It can be a lot.
It's a lot to think about.
Yeah,
it's a lot to think about. Well, the good part is that for, you know, for anybody that is wanting to go into a grant and goes and finds grants that are suited towards them, because that's another thing, is you need to go and find the grants that you're going to be successful for. But they give you a list of criteria that mm-hmm. that they need to turn in. And it's a lot to deal with. The afterthought of it that you're talking about is something that's really interesting to me. Going into thinking about bringing public arts into our town, one of the bigger things while I'm doing my research is that most towns that have done this successfully have been able to build an organization that specifically handles this for the government. Right. And then they have what they'll pull in and start pulling their funds either privately or from local government, and then start getting match grants, which are right. hopefully ones that you'll apply for and have X amount of money and you'll get a grant that matches that. But one of their big things is maintenance. You know, don't forget about the maintenance. Hold 15% aside so you can keep all of this going and it's not going to just deplete right. under you. This may be completely out of your ballpark and unquestioning. This is just something that's I've had in my mind. Are you familiar with any ordinances or anything like that in Mississippi that protect public art or protect projects like this that we're doing? I know that in Florida and Texas and, you know, some other states, they'll pass ordinances that mm-hmm. protect all of this and end up helping with the grant process because you have a long-term goal. But that's a whole other aspect of all of this that it just keeps you start pulling a thread and there's more under there.
Yeah. I don't know of any statewide ordinances for those things. a lot of times the maintenance related things or any ordinances required to what can be or cannot be installed are more handled on the local level. In Cleveland, for example, we have a really wonderful sculpture garden that originated outside the Performing Arts Center at Delta State and has now, through the course of its, I guess, 20-something year lifetime, sculptures have now spilled all over the campus at the university and are now downtown Cleveland. And so the city has agreed to some funds to assist with the maintenance of that. Another term that is often used is sustainability. That's something that we ask in our grants with the Mississippi Delta National Heritage Area is if we give you this money, how will it be sustained? Are you going to have to come back to us again next year in order to just keep this going? And if that's the case, then you're not likely to get the grant. So certainly thinking about the sustainability. Now in the world of public art, sculptures are a little easier to maintain than, other types of art.
Yeah.
They're built to be outside. But that is something to keep in mind is how does that work? Now you mentioned holding aside 15%. Another thing that you have to keep in mind is what's the physical year? What are the requirements of the grant? Ours are fiscal years. So our fiscal year runs July 1st to June 30th, kind of models an academic year generally. The expectation is that the funds are spent within that year. So holding 15% aside to spend the next year and the next year is not a requirement in our grant. That doesn't mean that that's the case for every grant. We require a government entity or a 501c3 or kind of essentially the two things, schools, government bodies, or 501c3s. A lot of communities will have like a local arts nonprofit. In Cleveland, we have that. We also have the university. We have a government set up. That's something to check too. Does your local city government have a nonprofit that it's set up? So the town of Cleveland kind of set up a nonprofit that can receive grants kind of independent of the city government and redistribute them. And then there's individual artist grants. Mississippi Arts Commission, for example, works primarily with individual artists. So those are things. We'll get a lot of artists for our grants with the Heritage Area that are asking, every year I'll field some questions about projects that are really more independent artist based. And so that's something to consider too. If you've got something that you really want to see manifested, but you want it exactly the way it's in your head, then you may not be looking for a partner. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I apply for grants like that myself. But that also means that you're limiting who you might be able to work with. So our grant program, for example, probably would in some way, depending on how it was presented, public art would totally fit within the realm of what we do, but you'd have to partner with someone if you're an individual artist, or you'd have to have your own 501c3. And then that brings in a whole other list of things that, you know, you start looking at too. Who does it really serve? Is it a real nonprofit? That's not the way we phrase it, but you want to be able to show that, that your nonprofit is active. So the best advice I could probably give for any individual artist is start small. Mississippi Arts Commission, for example, has, what do they call them? They have $500 grants that they award annually. I can't remember what they're called. They've got a couple of different levels, and they've set their grants up specifically, I think, with some of that in mind to ease you into the process. So the $500 grants are generally for website maintenance or workshops or things like that. There's not a whole lot of restrictions. They're relatively low hanging fruit, and they're accessible, and the application's not a really hard one to do. And then from there you move into like project grants, which are $2,000. And then you've got fellowship grants that are up to 5,000, I think. You've got South Arts, which is a regionally based grants organization that gives awards to 13 Southern state winners. And then awards of those, prize Rory Doyle, who's a photographer here in Cleveland, won that a few years ago. Ashley Coleman, who's another photographer from Jackson here. So anyway, that's a whole lot of talk to answer your question that ordinances are generally community specific, but they're definitely things that you want to check into.
Yeah. One more kind of question, because you have an interesting perspective. You are both an artist who has applied for grants, and you are also on the inside who gets to see the grants that are being applied for and the applications. What are some things, let's call them red flags. Like when you're going through and you're thinking about applying for a grant and you're starting the process, what are some red flags that you should be aware of that, you know, this is not going to fly?
Well,
or better yet, successful tips, either one.
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing is be specific, and get out of your own way. So, and I still have that trouble when I'm applying for my own grants. Start early, run it through a lot of people and have them read it. Don't sit down the night before or even the week before and try to write the grant. I mean, it's possible, but it actually shows up when you're reading the grants. You can kind of tell who threw it together at the last minute, and you can tell who put a lot of work and thought into it. And a lot of that comes with the budgets and the activities, and you can tell when somebody's just kind of throwing numbers out there. But being specific, a lot of people will try to overdo it. Be realistic about where you are, what you've done in the past. You're with grants, you're trying to build off of things. Don't come out of the gates the first time with this huge, elaborate $100,000 project, unless you've got really good partners that have been through that process. Build success upon success. Start with something that you know you can complete. And if that means applying for just $500 first time out of the gates, do it. Document it. And then the next time, build off of that. And when you apply for your next grant, you can point to your successful completion of the first one. Because your history is a part of that. And so I think a lot of people will be too broad in what they're trying to do, and And it's okay to be specific. It's okay to not ask for the full amount. And that means you really need to give some thought to what you're trying to do. And most likely, your first attempt is not going to be funded or not funded in full. And don't take that personally. You assume that the people that you're talking to know nothing about you. They know nothing about what you're trying to do. And so you're making an argument for why that matters. And data is important. We as artists tend to shy away from data sometimes. I know that I do. That's probably one of the biggest lessons that I've learned is poetry is great. But when somebody's investing money, they want to know specifically how that money is being spent. So if I tell you, if I do this project, there's going to be a lot of people whose lives are changed. Okay. Everybody's going to say that. Versus we did this exercise in town where we experimented with this and realized that 20,000 people showed up to a space where normally only 200 people show up. And when we polled them, they said they showed up because of this. So if you give us this money, we can expand on that project by doing this, 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 and this. And because we know that that project increased interest by X amount, we anticipate that with even more resources, it'll increase by X amount. That's data that grant readers pay attention to. So you have to pull some of those elements. And that's just one example. But don't just say a lot of people's lives are going to be changed because of this.
Right.
Give me data that proves it. And that's where small grants that help show success can build on others. So your history of grant applications, it's all joined. So think about how a previous application applies to your current application and how each one builds off of each one. And if you don't have that history, go find someone who does. The odds are there's an organization in your community that has had success with grants in some way. Maybe they haven't had success with arts grants, but they've had success with other grants. So they can show that they know how to manage the money, that they can be a fiscal agent. And also probably last tip, if you want to be involved, if you do partner with someone in your community, you probably don't want to, you may write the grant, but you probably want to hand it off to them because the odds are they're going to then turn around and hire you to assist with it. But I'd be really clear about that because a lot of grants won't allow the recipient to pay a salary or anything like that. So you want to be real careful about like how all that shapes out.
Good catch. Good catch. So proof of concept, do your research, simplify, don't overcomplicate, find partners, seek out people who have, or seek out people and organizations who have applied for and been successful with grants. And it's almost sounding like you build up your grant resume, mm-hmm. right? You start small and yep. then each job you get, each grant you get is a little bit bigger and a little bit better. And everybody's building trust within you and what That's you're right. doing at the same time that you're fishing for their trust. You need to put up or shut up. Yeah. Thank you. I don't know how much this cleared up for anybody else. It just adds 1,000 more questions. but I cannot tell you how valuable the things that you're talking about to be able to share them with other artists who might be thinking, grants are a thing. I need to be funded and this is a way to be funded. So I really, yeah. really appreciate you coming on.
You're very welcome. I would add that if anybody's interested, our grant cycle will open up again in the fall, but now is a really good time to start thinking about projects. We do fund, I think this year we funded, Well, in the lifetime, this was the sixth cycle that the Mississippi Delta National Heritage Area has done grants. It's the first cycle that I've been through from start to finish. And over the lifetime of this, I think we've generated almost three or four million dollars of economic stimulus.
Wow. Within the community.
We do have a one-to-one grant. You mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
So we require a one-to-one match. That match can be in kind, which means volunteer services or donations. It doesn't have to be a direct cash match. That's an important thing to look at. What type of grant are you applying for? Is it reimbursable, meaning do you have to spend the money first and then show the receipts? A lot of times that's what a introductory grant will do. So the funder is not in trouble if you screw it up, because you have to turn in the receipts before you get any money back. Is it a match grant like ours? Is it a federal grant? Because you can't match federal money with federal money. So if you have a grant from another federal agency, you can't use that to match our money. You can use state money with federal money. So those are all things that you have to think about. Or is it just like a fellowship where they basically give you the money and say, we think you're brilliant, go do it. Those are the best ones to get. They're also the hardest ones to get. And so anyway, so all of that to say, our website is msdeltaheritage.com. You can go to our grants page, msdeltaheritage.com/grants, and you'll find some information about our grants. If anyone is interested in projects that they may want to do in the Mississippi Delta, that's a good place to start. We will likely be doing a series of workshops, particularly in the fall, but we may start a little bit earlier in the summer for anyone that wants even more information about how to go through the process of grants, and more specifically our grant program. That may be something to keep an eye out for. So I would say sign up for that newsletter, and you'll get a lot of information from that. Most of it probably will be coming from me. Yeah. And so anyway, that's my pitch for that organization, but we definitely welcome projects that are related to cultural interpretation, and the arts clearly fall under that.
On a personal note, and aside from the grants and everything like that, you have your own residency program.
And we do.
You mind? I mean, I'd love to, for our listeners to hear a little bit about that before I let you go.
So, I live on an old family farm. It's about 80 acres just outside of Cleveland. About 40 of that is a hayfield that a local farmer farms, and about 30 or so of that is soybean fields that another farmer farms. And at one point we had horses out here, so we have the structures that are related to that. When my father passed away, I kind of took over the responsibility of managing the property. And as much as I love horses, I was not going to keep horses. And we didn't have many left when he passed away anyway. So I'm in the process of repurposing the horse barn, which is about 5,000 square feet, into studio spaces and maker spaces. So we now have an Airstream out here and another old vintage camper that we use for artists to be able to stay. We've got about a 2,500, maybe 3,000 square foot pole barn, which is where the tractors would be parked underneath. And that's been cleared out to create a wood shop and another room, another little studio suite for someone to stay. I live in a house here on the property, and so we've started doing residencies. My goal all along has been to be able to take this land and share it with creatives, and kind of create a space where people can find time to work and resources. And so we invite applications for residencies here. We provide space to work and a space to live. The residencies are 2 to 3 weeks, depending on what the artist would prefer. You can do up to 3 weeks. And the only caveat is that you kind of think about what it means to make in the Delta, and that you leave some mark behind for future artists and creatives to come. We've had three We've had two formal residents now, probably 5, 6, 7 kind of informal as we've been redeveloping the property. We've got another painter coming in 2 weeks, probably music in May, and then some things in the fall that are in the works. But we certainly would love to provide that space to other artists. The website is jxfarms.com. The application is relatively simple. There's not a whole lot to it. Basically, if we can, if you're serious about coming here and kind of making work and getting away and being still and quiet and contemplative while you're making work, then we want to find a time and a way for that to happen for you.
What an awesome experience to provide and to be a part of. That's really neat. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on. I'll include all the social that you linked that you were talking about. I'll link that in the show notes. This whole process of public art and finding about funding and finding and you know, next we're going to talk to an artist who does murals and find out all about their side of the process. So all of these bits and pieces build up and build up on each other and create a wealth of knowledge that you need to know to get these things happening. So you coming on and being a piece in this big puzzle is, for me, really, really nice. Appreciate it. For everyone else, we will see you next week and we'll have a brand new artist. Until then, bye.